This episode is all about cyclical nature, menstrual cycle, and circadian rhythms. In this episode, I speak to Iris Josefina, one of the leading experts in holistic hormone health and integrated cyclical living. Her teachings have supported thousands of women in reclaiming their body literacy and working with their cycle so that they can truly thrive in life. Because our cycles are not just inconvenience, they really are a map and a guide for us to truly unlock our fullest potential, our well-being, our vitality, and our success. So in this episode, we will cover the phases of menstrual cycle and what your body truly needs in each phase. You'll learn how to align your work, relationships, and self-care with hormonal shifts. You'll learn the top biohacks that every woman needs to know. And you'll understand why cyclical living is the key to sustainable health, energy, and feminine power. You are listening to the Feminine Power Podcast, your portal into embodiment, feminine awakening, and the true power of your life force, sexual energy. I'm your host, Maria Grinina, founder of Feel, a global platform for feminine embodiment, and a coach for women ready to live with magnetism, love, and full aliveness. If you're ready to rise, you're in the right place. Follow the show and let's begin.
I kind of like organically segued my way into this work. Like my academic background is in cultural and medical anthropology. So I've always been very interested in how people across cultures approach their body, approach health, approach healing, approach pathology, and everything that can happen within a body. And so during my final research, I was in the south of India researching pregnancy experiences among the women there and how they perceived their pregnant bodies and the whole process of healing after birth and the experience of being pregnant and the experience of birthing. And so my entrance into this work was actually through the like phase of the cyclical continuum that is pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. And after I got back from this field work as an anthropologist, I decided to become a doula. My wish was to become a midwife, but I was already studying for 5 years and I was like, oh, am I gonna like start another like academic study in midwifery or a clinical study, or am I just going to study to become a doula so I can be present in this very special part of our cyclical continuum and be like a witness of this whole process and supporting people. And as I set up my business as a doula, which I was doing part-time, I was seeing clients, and I noticed that after a while and after seeing more clients, the main chunk of my work was actually not like helping people prepare for their birth and their postpartum, but it was actually explaining basic biology. And what had happened during conception, what happens during pregnancy, what happens physiologically during each phase of the pregnancy and each trimester, what happens during, you know, the postpartum period and what can happen physiologically and what experiences come with that on a very physical, mental, emotional level. And I was like, hold on a minute, like, how is it possible that all these highly educated people that I'm working with, because I lived in a city, I had like highly educated people with PhDs, high quality careers, and yet the simplicity of biology was missing from their lives, which then also led them to experience things in their bodies that were very normal, like shifts in cervical mucus or shifts in temperature or shifts in mood that they perceived as something is wrong with me or this is not normal, while all of the things that most of them experienced were actually very physiologically, anatomically normal. And this had me think like, wow, so many people during their pregnancies are having all these insecurities and all these alarm bells going off that are completely preventable and unnecessary. And I feel that what adds to the stress of being pregnant is having to educate yourself while you're pregnant and meeting yourself on all these levels, because pregnancy is a portal. It opens up like so many different layers of what is physiologically possible, how you see yourself as a person, your whole identity shifts. And I feel all of this is way harder when you haven't met your cyclical self before falling pregnant. A lot of women and people who are pregnant need to do this work of homecoming to their cyclical self during pregnancy, because the shifts and changes of pregnancy really bring you to your body and to your physical embodiment of what it means to be cyclical. And then I was really called to move the focus of my work to before pregnancy, so that I could help people really land in their bodies and land in the education and understanding of their bodies and their body sovereignty, their body literacy before falling pregnant, so that the process of pregnancy could really focus on the pregnancy and not on all the other stuff that you can actually already do before you get pregnant. So it was like an organic shift. I really loved, you know, being present at births and witnessing people in that whole process. It's an absolute honor that I got to do that. But I really feel my place now with my work is really before that, regardless of whether people want to have children or not. But the process of physically, emotionally, spiritually, psychologically, mentally coming home to this cyclical body and all of the phases it can move through, because I feel when we do that, it's easier and it makes more sense to shift to other parts of our womb continuum, whether it is conception, pregnancy, postpartum, and then later on perimenopause and menopause. So it was organically the way that my work unfolded, but I feel that this is really my place, and it's like a place of the womb continuum that really inspires me, and it's really powerful to see people come home to their bodies in their own unique way through my guidance. Like, of course, I give guidance, but every person has their own experience of their cycle, and there's like gradations that are different and expressions that are different, and it's just a very big honor for me to be able to witness people in that journey and play a role as a guide to help people experience this sense of like sovereignty and agency over their bodies. Yeah.
Yes. So really, I would love on this podcast today to show how beautiful and amazing it is to care for yourself. Even if you don't have a problem now, you don't have to have a problem to care for yourself. And if you already have something that bothers you, there is a way of healing that holistically and in a caring and beautiful way. So I would love to ask you, what cycle is actually about? Like, what is it about? Why do we need to care for it?
Wow, that's a huge question. I first want to affirm what you just said, and that there is like this whole cultural narrative that focuses on, okay, we only need to act when something is wrong. I think this really also has to do with, and this is a bit of like backtracking, but it'll make sense when we move forward. I think this also has a lot to do with actually the Industrial Revolution, where the attention was taken away from community and community care and caring for one another, and really making a person's life about being in service of other people, most importantly an employer, to then make us believe that being in service of society in the form of working for an employer is the best way that you can do that. And I feel that this movement in time, especially in Western society, has pulled us away from community care. And community care is also really about reminding each other that we can care for ourselves, but also checking each other how we're doing. And I feel that this is, you know, with the coming of the Industrial Revolution and the vast movement towards individualism has really harmed also the way that we take care of our bodies, because this productivity mindset and being in service of something greater outside of ourselves to in the way of like productivity and performance really pulls you away from your body, because something else outside of yourself is always more important than what's going on inside of you. And that can be how you feel, how your body physically responds. Like, we are very much taught to like override that for the sake of being in service. Like, this whole glorification of being busy and working hard has completely gone like overboard. Like, it's become so intense that the balance has been lost. And I feel this ties into one of the reasons why so many people have problems, because when something outside of you is always more important than you checking in with yourself and your boundary is going to keep being crossed by you, because you're unaware of where the boundary is. And we have been trained, let's call it trained, by society, specifically Western society, to always keep going. And this makes that, you know, in all the layers that we have in the body, especially from a nervous system perspective, we are always in the forward movement, but we forget like the movement that comes back to us and the reflective movement. So I feel this really ties into why so many people have problems. That's one part of it. And then, you know, having a cycle ties into being part of something bigger. So I see the menstrual cycle really as the body's report card, but it's also our blueprint. So our infradian rhythm is very tightly connected to the circadian rhythm going on outside of us. And then we also have our internal circadian rhythm. So we have hormones that run on a 24-hour clock, but we also have hormones that run on like an average 29-day clock. And these are very, very much on a tight rhythm. Western society and the way that we have organized time is not in alignment with both this circadian rhythm and our infradian rhythm. Continuously override both of these rhythms by various things that we do like on the daily, like being in front of a screen for too long, not seeing enough daylight, eating at weird times, or doing something else while you're eating, like watching TV or something else. So we have created this lifestyle, if you will, that is almost like a biological mismatch with how our body is supposed to be dealt with and supported. And I feel that this mismatch, where we with our human brains have created this lifestyle where we think that we can control nature or overrule nature or be better than nature, is actually enormously backfiring. And it's showing up in signals and symptoms of our body. That's the way I look at it. And I feel that when we become aware of that, awareness is the most important thing, then we can move towards like a framework that honors both this circadian rhythm, this day-night rhythm that we are in as animals, we are animals, and this infradian rhythm that moves through our body in the form of a menstrual cycle. And I feel we need to become aware of this mismatch and see how we can return to our physiologic blueprint that is meant to thrive with having this infradian rhythm and this circadian rhythm in check. And I also personally think that we should step away from our idea that the way that we organize society and the way that we organize time is really the best way for us to thrive.
Yeah, well, I agree with that for sure. Clearly it doesn't work, right? So you say there is no reason to dispute that. Clearly we're not becoming healthier by living in this fake way, when instead of looking at the sun and at the light and then the moon and aligning what we need to do as with nature, we are aligning ourselves with rules that we ourselves created, which doesn't really make sense. And I love how you describe the menstrual cycle and circadian rhythm and different rhythms that we follow that actually make us more natural. And natural means healthy. Very often we are created as healthy beings, and then we meet the world in a way that doesn't make us healthy anymore. So let's actually describe a healthy circadian rhythm, aligning ourselves with that, and then with a cycle. I'd love to hear how you describe that.
So what I would love for people to understand is that everything in our bodies is timed. So our melatonin runs on a 24-hour clock. Our cortisol runs on a 24-hour clock. Our estrogen, LH, FSH, progesterone, they all run on their own unique clocks. So what is natural for me is that we start to understand, how do these clocks work? And I think the most important thing that we need to remember is that we are animals, and animals respond to light, and our cells respond to light. And I feel that this is the biggest missing link in the whole hormone health space that not many people are talking about. Like, everyone is about how to fix your hormones, like, here, pop this supplement and do this and do that. But what we are forgetting is that our body runs on specific timelines. And I feel that when we start to understand these timelines of our body, we can actually support it better. And the way in which I see health thrive in our body is when we start to do things on the clocks that already exist, not the clocks that we created, but the clocks that already exist. For example, when the light comes in the morning, it's very important that we turn ourselves to that light to let the retina of our eyes know, hey, it's day again, and you can start producing all the hormones we need for the day. So our glucose and our insulin drop at the beginning of the day. Cortisol rises, which is very much needed to get the body started for the day. Now, how many people do not look outside or go outside first thing in the morning? They just ramp up their inside light, which is often LED, which is not good for all of your cells and the energy centers in your cells. What we need is light in the morning. We need light to communicate to the retina of our eyes that it's okay to start the day again, so that all of the processes that are needed, so cortisol goes up, glucose and insulin goes down, your body gets hungry, it lets you know it needs fuel, you need to start preparing the first meal of the day. And then these clocks get started when we are supported by light and fuel. And then throughout the day, there are certain times that our body requests fuel, like food. For most people, that is 2 to 3 meals per day. The two most important meals are your breakfast, which has to be eaten about 1 hour, within 1 hour after waking, after this cortisol awakening response. Then we have lunch, and then we have a small dinner. And the way that nature has set it up is that we need the most fuel at the beginning of the day to get through the most part of the day, and that we don't need so much fuel at the end of the day. And this also brings me into like this whole idea that people are like into fasting and all of the things. I really like to look at the field of chrononutrition, which means how do we time our meals for optimal thriving in the body? And science shows that the morning meal and the lunch meal are the most important ones to get us through the day. And we finish the day with a smaller meal so that we can peacefully go into the night and have the body go into regeneration. And we create the most nourishing field for our body to produce melatonin to have a good night's sleep. So how I look at it is that nature has provided us with this beautiful internal clock system, and it's up to us to just attune to it. So when you wake up, when you see the light, when you plan your meals, and when you go to bed. And ideally, we don't eat before the sun or after the sun has set at night, before that. So the way I'd like to look at it is that we just have to simplify it by looking around us to see what is the natural clock that, you know, governs all our body's processes. And the clock is literally light and dark. It's as simple as that. And then we eat when it's light, and we don't eat when it's dark.
Yeah, I'm noticing a lot of menstrual health specialists, menstrual health coaches, and women-centered health and nutrition specialists do share that for women specifically, it is quite important to eat in the morning because of cortisol rising, and how how toxic this whole idea of intermittent fasting, specifically for women, had become. Could you speak to that a little? Because it, I feel I do not find enough information on that and enough clarity. Because you know, there one person says you have to not in the morning, and then the other person says you have to eat in the morning. And then what do I need to do? I don't understand.
So from a female physiologic perspective, what happens in the morning, I just mentioned it, our cortisol goes up and our insulin and glucose go down. They are at the lowest in the morning. So we don't want our insulin and our glucose to be at a very low stage and cortisol to be revved up higher. So for that to be prevented and for both of these to stay within a natural normal curve, we can dampen that by fueling specifically with protein. Now, how our body deals with cortisol and insulin, they are at the top of the hormone hierarchy. So our body will always prioritize these hormones over our reproductive hormones. So it's always cortisol and insulin are really about survival and delivering energy in the body and preventing, preventing threats, really. That's what cortisol is good for. So when we don't listen to these natural clocks and these natural signals of the body and make these curves like go very far out of each other, so cortisol revs up even more and insulin dips really deeply, this can create an internal stress response that is completely like preventable. And I feel that, you know, Western society already revs us up so much. And fasting for the female body, specifically waiting to eat, that's how people perceive fasting. It's not how I perceive it at all. Fasting has a purpose. So we fast to give the body a break from intense like processes, but we have an internal design for that. Like when you do a 12-hour fast overnight, this is amazing for the body. And this is natural because at night, the body doesn't need fuel. The body is here to regenerate. Now, if you're going to not eat and prevent your body from taking in fuel while you have a lot of energy output for your work, for sports, for caring for your children, you're going to create a biological mismatch with how your body is meant to function, because then you're undernourishing while your energy output keeps going. And that's not a smart thing to do, especially not with a female body, because our sex hormones also impact how our cortisol and our insulin respond. So in the beginning of our menstrual cycle, specifically in our follicular phase all the way up to ovulation, we are a little bit more resilient and we are more insulin sensitive, and fasting could be a little bit easier then. Whereas in your luteal phase, we naturally become more insulin resistant, which means that the body is not as responsive to glucose and glucose distribution as we want it to be. So in this phase, it can actually be very dangerous to fast because you throw off your rhythm even more. So the moment in which I recommend fasting for people, which technically is time-based eating and allowing periods of not eating in your day, is the night. Because then you have the lowest energy output and the lowest risk of creating damage. So the way in which I recommend it, like people can definitely do a 12-hour fast. So let's say you stop eating after 6 or 7 p.m. at night, and then your next meal is between 7 and 8 or 6 and 8. The next day, that's a great fasting period. And it is in alignment with your circadian biology, and you don't harm your sex hormones with it. It is harmful when you are pushing your energy output like hard by just living and doing your day and being on the run, and then undernourishing. Because your body needs energy. And a lot of people, especially females, are already under eating. A lot of people don't eat enough protein. They don't eat enough fat. And what you then create is actually a malnourishment and an undernourishment while your energy input is not matching your energy output. And this is what we want to prevent. This is how a lot of problems get started. And I would say if you're into fasting, if you really like the idea of giving your body like a break, the best way to do that is to do it in alignment with your physiology, with your circadian biology, and in alignment with the circadian hormones, namely cortisol and insulin, because you have a new chance with these hormones every single day to support them or to harm them. And I would more like lean into like, how can we support them rather than rev them up? Because living in a Western society has already, you know, negative effects on how our bodies respond. Like we take on so much, there is so much like stressors in our day. Like being in traffic is like a massive stressor and people don't realize that. Just, you know, running to the train, getting your bus, like all these things are stressful for the body. They're like minor stress events that happen throughout the day, which are the amount of stress events in our day is significantly higher than our ancestors or even our grandparents. Like if I think about my own grandparents and the stressors that they had, they were very minimal. Like I deal, two generations later, deal with so much more stress on the daily that they cannot even like perceive or come up with. And when I say, you know, when I shared, they pass now, but when I shared like with the stressors, they were just looking at me like, what? It's just inconceivable to them. So I think we need to be aware of that. And if you want to fast, do it in alignment with your physiology and your circadian biology. And most of the times, unless you're severely undernourished or you have a severe issue of insulin resistance or leptin resistance, your body will probably do well when you just do time-based eating and don't eat overnight until your breakfast.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. Yeah, I must say this eating thing is something I'm going to be introducing this month because I've had quite a rough time with my hormones recently. And this is something I'm discovering. Food is important.
It is. So yeah, it's how we nourish. Yeah. And it's not only food. Like food is part of it. Like food really helps us like transform or alchemize it into ATP, which is the energy currency of our body. But there is also other factors that provide that energy currency. So it's not just food that we need. We also need light. I spoke to that earlier. And we need to have specific forms of light to support our body.
Yeah, it's something I do. And I would love you to maybe share some of these biohacking tips. I'm sure you know. But what I've noticed years ago, even before I found out about the blue light and all, that it was very, very stressful for me to go back at night in the underground where they have these extremely strong LED lights, or in shops and supermarket when it's after 10 and I'm just going home and I'm tired and this light is just so stressing me out. So I started wearing just eyewear, like sunglasses to protect myself. Now I use blue light eyewear. And I feel like that's quite a powerful biohack for women for sure. I mean, for everybody.
Yeah. So when we have, I call this like poor light hygiene, when there is too much artificial light and not enough natural light, which is a problem for most people these days, this can actually disrupt our ovarian function, like severely our progesterone production, our mood, our thyroid health, our general, you know, adrenal health. And what it does is it really exhausts our mitochondria, which are the energy fuel centers of our cells. And when we allow our body to receive natural light, and not only light through your eyes, also light through your skin, like we forget that our skin is like our biggest organ that can perceive UV light, and different types of UV penetrate different layers in our skin to activate certain parts in our cells and help our mitochondria to create this ATP that we need. So you can do everything right. You can, you know, time your meals. You can go to bed early. You can get up, you know, early in the morning. You can do your movement. But if you do all of that in an artificial light environment, You're doing actually more harm than good without even realizing. And I feel that this is where a lot of people like lack awareness and knowledge. I recently even read this article that said if you go to the gym like 5 days a week instead of, you know, half of the week going to the gym and half of the week going out and being out to do your exercise, being in an LED lit gym can actually negate all the benefits that you're trying to get from your exercise because the artificial LED light is disrupting it. And that's a really big thing to realize. So it's, yes, movement is good for you and it's good for, you know, your cells, your body, but you don't want to move too much in a very densely artificially lit environment because this light is penetrating your skin, it's penetrating your retina, and it's disrupting the benefits that you're seeking with your movements, because artificial blue light really disrupts your mitochondria. It exhausts the mitochondria. And I feel that this is the missing link in a lot of like health conversations. And this is also why I've started to ask my clients, like, what kind of light do you use? What kind of light bulbs do you have in your house? And I mean, I'm renting this apartment and we have like, I don't know where you can see it. No, there is like these square LED lights in my apartment. I've switched them on once ever since I moved here, like 1.5 year ago, because it's just too bright and it's disrupting everything. So we really want to pay attention to what is the kind of light I spend most of my days in. Like a lot of people are in offices these days. A lot of people are inside in offices with artificial light and acclimatized temperatures. Like our bodies need to be able to oscillate between different types of temperatures to improve immunity. So these two things are two things that we often don't talk about, but that are very important to take into consideration when someone has problems. Like we cannot underestimate how important light exposure is for our bodies. And this means in the morning, we want to have a lot of, you know, more blue type UV light from the sun, like preferably. And in the evening, we want to have more red, infrared UV light entering our eyes because it really tells our body to produce melatonin and to prepare for the night. Yeah.
Yeah, it might sound complicated for some people. However, I want to bring it down to a very simple notion. Everything that you share in a simple way, it means just be closer to nature. Yeah, real light, real rhythm, sun goes up, sun goes down, real food. The time that to eat is really when our bodies need it the most, and the more attuned we are to the bodies, the easier it is to actually just feel it. So just being closer to nature makes things so much simpler. And from here, what about the 29, 28, 30 day cycle of a woman? How does the healthy cycle look like? How would we move through this cycle in the most healthy and respectful way to our bodies?
Yeah, so shall I first explain how I would like describe a healthy menstrual cycle?
Yes, please, because I feel like a lot of people don't really know in absolute basics. So it would be really amazing to have the absolute basics of the menstrual cycle and how a healthy one looks like in the very basic level.
So ideally, we have a cycle that starts with like bright red blood. That's day one of our cycle. That's our menstruation, our menstrual time. And for most people, we want to see this between 3 and 7 days, depending on, you know, their environment and what their body's normal is. And then from our menstruation is actually part of our follicular phase. Like a lot of people think it's like four distinct phases, but I prefer to see two big phases of the cycle. So we have our follicular phase, with menstruation being part of the follicular phase, because during menstruation, the egg already starts ripening again for the next cycle. Then in the middle, we have a main event of our cycle, which is ovulation, which is when the egg is released and when we're most fertile. And then after ovulation, we have a longer phase, which is our luteal phase. And in the first part of the cycle, so end menstrual phase and the follicular phase, estrogen is dominant. And after we've ovulated, we start producing progesterone. And in the whole luteal phase, progesterone is the most dominant hormone. And a healthy menstrual cycle is, let's say, between 25 and 35 days. Science says 21 days, but I find that a little bit too short, to be quite honest, especially if people want to conceive. Bleeding is 3 to 7 days. Ovulation happens somewhere in the middle of the cycle, not always on day 14, like that's a myth. And ideally, we have a luteal phase of about 11, minimum 11 days to make sure that whenever we want to conceive, there is enough progesterone to sustain the first part of pregnancy. And most people have the lowest energy during their period and the highest energy during their ovulation. And the last part of the luteal phase, where people may experience PMS, is for most people the hardest time to like deal with. I think that's also because we culturally have labeled this phase as like the trouble phase or the phase that nobody wants to deal with. But I feel that there is wisdom in every single, in every single phase. And with my clients, I always try to support them to see what their strengths are in each menstrual cycle phase. And it's very funny what comes up because people report different things, which really shows to me that we cannot generalize the menstrual cycle. Everybody is so unique. Every situation is unique. And how someone feels and interacts with their cycle is very bio-individual. And how a cycle expresses itself is also very bio-individual.
Yeah. I find it deeply empowering to track cycle and symptoms and understand oneself over time. I've learned so much about myself. I know very specific things that happen on a very specific day of my cycle, like really specific things. And that helps me plan my life. And it helps me indeed understand the superpowers, because before starting to track cycle, it's just frustrating. It's like, I feel shit today. And I don't understand why do I feel like, and I should be feeling differently. And then I'm like, why do I feel not this way? And with more awareness comes more appreciation. I'm like, I feel this way today. And that means I'm going to go and take a long walk and sit under the tree. And then amazing ideas are going to come to me. You know, like all these little things that I get to find out because of tracking is fantastic. And I'm wondering, what do you find about your clients and their differences in the way they track and what kind of symptoms can arise in different phases, just so that we can show people what can be known and what awareness we can have?
Yeah, so first of all, I think it's important to understand the difference between tracking and charting. So I try to make this distinction because they are used interchangeably and they're not really the same. So tracking is really trying to get to know your cycle without necessarily using your tracking as birth control or to call in pregnancy. And this can look like marking when you start bleeding, marking when you stop bleeding, marking when there is emotional shifts or physical shifts happening in your cycle, and then marking when you are starting to bleed again so that you have an idea on how long your cycle was. Whereas charting is really a more in-depth practice where you keep track of your biomarkers, so your basal body temperature, your cervical mucus, and potentially your cervical texture and position. And you use these biomarkers to really see where you are in your cycle and when your fertile window opens and closes so that you can manage your fertility for conceiving or for preventing pregnancy. And some people use tracking and charting in unison. So they'll track their fertility biomarkers, but they'll also keep a journal to write down how they feel, what happened in their cycle, what they feel drawn to. And they can use, you know, it can be used in unison. But I really want to make this distinction because tracking is not really a way to perform birth control, whereas charting is really like the symptothermal method specifically, that most people use when they're charting is really introduced as a fertility awareness method, but also a birth control method or a method to get really clear on when conception could potentially happen.
Yeah. And so what happens when you, let's speak about tracking. How one can empower themselves by tracking their cycle?
I feel that tracking is a really good tool to get to know what your normal is. Because when you track what happens in your body for a couple of months, most people start to recognize patterns. And when you recognize patterns, you can, I think, make better decisions about your body. Let's say 5 days before your period starts, you know that your energy absolutely crashes and many things make you cry and all the things on your to-do list feel like an extreme mountain. You could potentially be more proactive about that and go like, oh, usually a couple of days before my period, I feel this way. So maybe in the next month, I can plan a lower workload on that day and see how I respond to that and how I feel in my body and whether my symptoms or signals of feeling overwhelmed get less. And I feel tracking can be really seen as like a almost like a self-love practice, because you're getting really up close and intimate with your body's boundaries and your body's information and how you feel in your body. And I also feel that with tracking, we, especially if we do it every day, we get to know ourselves in each phase of our cycle. And I really feel like I'm four different women in an entire menstrual cycle. And I love tapping into like, what does ovulatory Iris need? And what does she crave? And what does she thrive in? And I have that very clear, like written down in my journal. And so every time I hit that phase, I check in with that part of myself and I try to bring her out as much as I can and really try to step into that person that I am in that moment in my cycle, because it's fleeting, you know?
If you're listening to this and thinking, I want to live more in my power as a woman, I want to embrace my cyclical nature, embody feminine energy, and experience more love, creativity, flow, and money in my life, then I want to invite you into the Feminine Power Blueprint course. It is our 3-month feminine school of love, money, and power, where 11 world-class teachers guide you through the practices and wisdom that reconnect you to your body in your feminine essence. Enrollment for the next live journey is now open. We begin on October 2nd, and Iris will also be teaching in this course. You can now join through the link in the show notes. Simply go to the show notes, find the link, and you can learn all about it, download your syllabus, and join us today.
When I'm ovulating, I'm like, oh, next week I'm going to crash. So now I'm going to like do all of the things that I would love to do and do all the things that I'm really good at. And I love, you know, when I'm ovulating, I usually love like pushing a little bit harder in my business and doing all these things and finalizing all these projects. And I know I'm really good at it. And I also know that 1 week later, I'm not going to feel like I want to do all of that. So I try to be very proactive about, how I feel.
Yeah. So this gives, same for me, similarly, it gives us awareness that is deeply empowering, because we can plan so much better for ourselves and take care of ourselves without being frustrated onto anything that might happen or be in the way because of this awareness. And awareness is the most important step, as you've mentioned.
Yeah.
Since you work with so many people on their cycles, I wonder, what are the most common superpowers you find in each phase?
Oh, that's a good question. I think in the menstrual phase, a lot of people start embracing their own like permission slip for rest and taking it easier. And when they do that, they also usually on day 2 and 3, they really tap into their intuition and like develop their intuitive like sense and what that means for them in their lives and how they make decisions. And in follicular, I see that people have an extra sense or an extra perception about their highest potential. So who they can be as a person, who they want to be as a woman, who they want to be in their business, who they want to be in their relationships, who they want to be in the world, and how they put themselves out there. Like, I work with a lot of entrepreneurs as well. And in the follicular phase, I really see like this like forward moving force coming out of people, and people really embracing their own potential and their own, yeah, their own power. And in ovulation, this gets like amplified. And I also have actually met a lot of people in their ovulation who got like the perception like, oh, maybe I shouldn't actually be dating while I'm ovulating, because I hyper focus on like my date's potential, but not necessarily who they are as a person. So maybe I should better date them in my luteal phase, when I'm like more like a detective and more like sharp and cut bullshit. So I've met a lot of clients who had that realization for themselves, especially, you know, if they were, you know, dating someone. And I think in the luteal phase, one of the things that people learn through me and that they give back to me is that in the luteal phase, we need more fuel. We need more calories, like on a very physical level. And eating more can really dampen like the nervous system response that sometimes get really revved up for some people. And that can give people more energy just to get through that phase. And this is a game changer for a lot of people, like an insight that they have, like, wow, really, when I eat just a little bit more, I feel so much better. And if I eat before my raging hunger comes up, my mood stays a lot more stable as well. So I feel in the luteal phase, it's like a very physical, tangible thing that people start to realize, like, oh, when I fuel myself properly, my symptoms significantly become less. And also the planning part. So I teach people, and I think you do that too, to, as soon as their period starts, to like map out their entire cycle in their calendar so that they are aware of what is potentially coming. And of course, there is a little bit of wiggle room, because we never know how a cycle is going to unfold, but like roughly we can put it into our calendar. And another game changer for people is to plan less during their luteal phase, because a lot of people feel that they're like backfiring their decisions. And when they plan too much when they're like follicular and ovulatory, and they feel like, oh, this endless potential, and then they land in luteal and they're like, oh no, I planned too much in my calendar, what to do now? And then they feel guilty to potentially reschedule or cancel. But if we are aware about what is coming and take precautions and go like, I probably should not be planning too much in my luteal phase, but move it either to my follicular phase or just plan less in my luteal, this for a lot of people is a game changer.
Yeah, I mean, for sure, for sure. I can definitely resonate with that. And so what are the superpowers of luteal phase? What are the good things that come through? As I mean, as you mentioned, in dating, you can become way more aware.
Yeah, I feel for a lot of people, they are very honest. Like, there's a lot of deep honesty that can move forward in luteal phase. And usually the veil is so thin in luteal that we cut all the bullshit in that phase. And I feel that this part of luteal is very much disregarded in our society and is perceived as like hysterical or dramatic or overreacting. But I think when you really peel it down to what it actually means, I think this is like the best superpower that we can have. Like, everything that's not going well in our life or where we are crossing our own boundary is like looked at from a magnifying glass. And it can feel like really big in the moment. I'm not denying that. And it can come with like big emotions. But if you peel it down to the essence of the message, there is a lot of wisdom that comes with that. And I think if we start embracing that more and teach ourselves to like see through the emotion and see what the message is underneath, that we can like organize our lives in such like more embodied ways, because then we truly listen to what our body is trying to tell us. Because usually underneath a big emotion, let's say anger, underneath anger usually is sadness or grief or something that we're really not happy with. So I think it's important that we learn when there is a big emotion, can we sit with that and allow it to tell us what's underneath and where we may listen or adjust, and then use our menstruation and our follicular phase to bring forth these changes from a more energized space.
Yeah. And this is how the cycle completes. I love that, right? I find this time luteal phase for many people, and I don't do cycle coaching, but I do emotional and tantric kind of approach to life. And I am seeing in this phase, and also for myself, this is actually the perfect time to alchemize emotions, to do shadow work, to understand yourself, to practice a ritual, because also presence becomes easier. Is you're no longer distracted as much by the force and what to do and all the excitement of life that comes in follicular phase. And here you can actually sit with yourself and see. And indeed, the society has been naming it as like toxic. This is when you just cry for no reason and you're a bitch and all of that. But really, if something bothers you so much and that you feel it in your chill phase so much, probably there is a reason for it. Maybe, yes, you're overreacting, but maybe there is something to listen. And I find this time it can be really beautiful and so great and so powerful in so many ways when we discover that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think it's also important that we realize the way that we perceive time in luteal shifts. Like our body wants to slow down, but many of us keep pushing at a specific pace in life and keep, you know, shoving things onto our plate that most likely can wait a little bit longer. And I feel this is another like biological mismatch. Like how our body perceives time and wants to move in luteal is usually much slower and not so pushy. And we don't like mountains of things on our plate. But when we manage our time and our workload in that time, we can actually land in that space that you are describing, where we can actually just be present and witness what needs to come up for us, and then work through that in a slow, steady pace and have space for it. I sometimes say that PMS means providing myself with space, and I try to like remember that and remind my clients about that. And it's space on every level, like mentally, emotionally, physically, for some people even sexually. Like, where do you need space in your life?
Yeah. Oh, and on this note, one thing that I want to share with people, how you say all everyone is different and different symptoms are out there and different ways of perceiving different phases. And there is one thing that people have been always saying in the menstrual health space, or with cycle thinking, that you might be the best at performance in your ovulatory phase, like going out there, meeting people and being on stage, etc. And I do public speaking, and I've noticed before I was, ovulatory phase, I should be doing it then because of all this information, that's how it's supposed to be. And with time, I've noticed I am way better at that in my luteal phase, because in the ovulatory phase, I am intense. I want to be out there. I want to do things fast. I want to get it done. Like I want to be, I have a bit too much of that energy. And in my luteal phase, I can be just slow and present, and just get to the point slowly and just stay with the audience. And that's one thing I'm fascinated by, because I think unless we learn about our own unique selves, there is no real strong guideline. Everybody needs to understand their own cycle and how they in their unique bodies perceive themselves in each phase. And maybe there are lots of common things that happen to many people, but it doesn't really mean that that necessarily applies to one individual. And yeah, just want to highlight that.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think it's very important to always keep in mind this bio-individuality, because I feel with like the whole wellness space, there is like this perfect image of what a menstrual cycle should look like that is projected into the world. And whenever people are on their healing journey and they're like, oh my God, mine doesn't look like that at all, people immediately think like, oh, is there like something wrong with me? Do I need to be fixed? Is there any pathology going on? And I really want to like ensure people that the way that our cycles manifest has a reason. And you're not broken if your cycle, like 1 or 2 months, skips an ovulation. It's actually very normal for that to happen. Like, we are an ecosystem. Our bodies are ecosystems. And all that our body is constantly doing is responding to what it receives and what it doesn't receive. And it's very important to keep that in mind. And our bodies are very intelligent, and they never do something without reason. So even if your cycle is not like coming out as perfect this month or the next month or the next, trust that your body is doing this with a reason. And if you do feel like, I actually want support, know that there is support and that you can, you know, receive support if that's what you feel that you need. But don't go thinking if your body just doesn't ovulate for 1 or 2 months that you're inherently broken, because there's probably a very physiologic reason for that, why your body has now prioritized survival over reproduction. Like, we cannot forget that our bodies are super smart and they're just trying to communicate with us and to respond. Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. And for the people listening, thank you so much for listening. And yeah, I love these kinds of conversations where we can focus on this very important topic in conversation, because I feel that storytelling is how we have always learned as human beings. And I feel that podcasting, and every time I'm invited, I'm reminded about this, that, you know, we learn through story and we learn through experience. And sometimes that's even more important than, you know, learning hard science or, yeah, reading research articles. So I'm very grateful that you invited me and that you honor my wisdom and my knowledge. And I just want to say thank you.
That was Iris Josefina, and you can find her work on Instagram at Cycle Seeds. This is where she is sharing more on menstrual health, hormonal health, women's well-being, sexuality, and more. Iris will be teaching in the Feminine Power Blueprint all about cyclical nature, how we women can embrace our hormonal cycles and circadian rhythm and lunar cycle, and as a result, truly thrive in life. Feminine Power Blueprint courses are a 3-month journey of love, money, and power, a kind of school where you meet together in a community and get to learn powerful feminine wisdom and then practice through ritual and embodiment. By the end of the course, you come out with your own feminine power blueprint, really knowing in your bones how to live a life of your dreams. And as a listener of this podcast, you can now join with 10% off using the code PODCASTLOVE at checkout. The link is in the show notes, and I can't wait to welcome you there. My name is Maria Granina. I am your host of the Feminine Power Podcast. Until the next time.